Three. Welcome back to LTATM. Let's talk about the music. This is episode 20. This is a second look back episode where we revisit the highlights from episode 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14, and 15. Now, we're not going to look at 13, not because it's an unlucky number, but it's because that was my very first look back at episode 1 through 7. Okay. All right. Now, before I dive in, I want to take this moment to say thank you for all my new LTA staff, my amazing listeners, everyone who's watching. This journey has been incredible. I have had a blast learning how to do this as a solo host. I wouldn't lie, it was very intimidating at first, but I am finally over my stage fright and I'm finding my grooves. Okay. All right. And so anyway, the whole experience has been a learning curve testing what I'm made of after my education and how I love to hear from you. Okay, this is your chance. Let me know how what you think of my show. If you've been listening to the podcast on Audioboom, Amazon Music, or Spotify, or wherever you get your streaming your podcasts, head over to LTATM.com or letstalkaboutthemusic.com, hit that feedback button. The feedback button is on the top menu of the website, or if you go down to the banner, there's also a button right there and a code as well. Okay, now if you are watching it, you can do the exact same thing. Go down to the website, or you can put the video on pause and grab your phone and scan that QR code, okay, and leave a feedback. I would love to have your opinion on how you think of the podcast. Do I need to talk slower, faster? What kind of music you want to listen to? What kind of topics you're into? Let me know. And I do read the topics. Right now I got 5 people. Well, actually 4. I did one of them. So I do read the feedback, so it helps me learn more. Okay. And if you're enjoying the podcast, whether you're watching or listening, make sure to hit that subscribe button on my YouTube channel or hit the heart button where I stream it, okay? And also get a chance to go back and look at the blogs itself at letstalkaboutthemusic.com. Alrighty, you guys ready for the past 7 episodes? Okie dokie, here you go. First things first, Papa Satch, play that theme song for me. Hit it, guys!
Let's talk about the music. Let's talk about the band. Let's talk about the music. Let's talk about the sound. Let's talk about the music.
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about the music.
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about the music.
Okay, so the very first episode we're going to look at is going to be episode 8. Episode 8 is Will and my friend Kevin from Willie and the Whips. Alrighty, and we are having a conversation about a festival that I'm very interested in checking out. It's the Blues Festival. So check out the festival, what they're talking about. Check it out. So tell me more about this competition you guys are in.
Oh, okay, Will, this is yours.
Yeah, I want to hear about the competition. What's this competition? Well, tell me more about it, so maybe I'll go and check it out.
Sure. There's blues societies all over the country. There's one in Connecticut. There's 2 in Washington, at least. Probably. There's 3, I think.
There's a lot. Inland Empire, the South Sound, the Washington Blues. There's a lot.
Yeah. Yes. So those 3, at least. And they all... it's like, you know, the playoffs or something. You play your local blues society, and then each one nominates a band and a solo or duo act, and they get, we've played in competition, but we've also played supporting to raise money to send the the winning band to Memphis. And I think it's in January that they have a couple weeks there to compete, and they just play, you know, the entire, I don't know how many end up there, but there's got to be 30 bands and 30 solo and duo acts, I think, at least.
Yeah, it's amazing. And they're getting people from all over the country. And then the people, it's held in Memphis. The finals are held in Memphis. It's called the International Blues Competition because I believe that it is international. Yeah. It's pretty remarkable. We have competed in a show a few times. It's an exciting thing. It's difficult to place in that. There's a lot of stiff competition. It's enjoyable, but it's hard to get up. We've never been sent to Memphis.
So when does this competition start, and how can people register? Sure. When does it start?
I will go to the Washington Blues Society website, and it's probably, I'd guess, summer, based on my memory of like where we played. So, and then, that we raised money in the Blues Invasion in Snohomish, which was October, mm-hmm. I believe. So they're chosen by then. And the different chapters have different schedules, but I'd say start figuring out in summer.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I want to tell you, for musicians, the Washington Blues Society is amazing. They provide so much support. Organizers should consider creating a Washington Rock Society and a Washington Soul Society. I mean, what they do is the Washington Blues Society helps bands get to people. They hold gigs a couple of times a month. In on Aurora Avenue in Seattle and up in Snohomish at Collector's Choice. They have a few other places where they hold gigs where bands can break in and just, you know, not have to go through the troubles of getting a gig. They set up shows. Oh, you're a new band? Come on. We got a show for you.
Oh, nice.
Shows. They send bands to the International Blues Competition in Memphis. And what the Washington Blues Society does that is different than all the other blues societies who are involved, they raise money so that the band can buy hotel rooms and can pay their way so that musicians aren't handed, okay, you won. Good luck, sucker. I mean, you know, the Washington Blues take care of their people. But and they're a huge organization, not huge in numbers, but huge in what they do. They recently took over the Seattle Peace Concerts, which is a big concert series of free shows performed in the summertime, usually on Sundays. In Seattle. It's all volunteer effort, and it's been going on since 1980.
Wow.
And
it's still going. Park. I don't know if you can see this. No, you can't really. There's a wall of posters right here. And,
wow. It wasn't my design. Okay, so those who are listening, he's showing us band posters of the festival, and those who are being watched later, you're in treat.
But I just want to say, I can't say enough good stuff about the Washington Blues Society. They really look out for bands. And all I wish it was Washington Rock Society because, you know, people need the same kind of support. You can check out the Washington Blues Society for nothing. That's free. Go to wablues.org. They have a killer website, and they tell you where the bands are playing. I mean, they've got so many resources. Check them out if you love the blues.
You got it. All right, so pretty interesting, huh? I'm actually interested in checking out the Blues Festival here in Washington State, so I'm actually looking it up, okay? All right, now, the next one is episode 9. This is with my friend Morgan here in Pacific Northwest and Stephen James Moore out there in Canada who owns independent music promotions, and this is them explaining to everyone about what's their favorite genre to promote. So check this out. All right, cool.
Yeah.
All right, so what we're gonna do, I want to ask some questions for you guys, and you guys can bounce off of each other, ask each other questions, because this is a panel kind of thing of a podcast. That's what I'm trying to build anyway. So now, in your promotional experiences, now I know you guys promote different genres, but what is your favorite genre that you guys want to promote? We'll start with Morgan.
My heart is definitely in very theatrical productions. I love really big themed nights where people go all out and are like, this is, I did a Beetlejuice themed night at the start of this year, and we, you know, had shadow cast performers, we had bands, we had sideshow, we had a magician, like we had a little bit of everything, and it was all centered around the theme of Beetlejuice. And it was a lot of fun. And those, I think, are really easy to get people excited about, you know, especially if you pick a theme or a genre or something that has a wide reach. People, myself included, love to get dressed up or show off the one cool stripy suit they have in their closet. And so for me, a lot of fun. And also there's a lot of advertising to work with, you know, when you can make the design based off of pre-existing things, you can really evoke a lot of cool feelings. I feel like sometimes having some constraints as an artist give you an opportunity to be more creative. If you just have a blank piece of paper, where do you even start? But if you start with, okay, we're throwing a circus, or we're, you know, it's a 4th of July party, or it's Halloween, you know, or whatever. I really like when there's a cohesive idea at the center that everything kind of grows off of.
All right, cool. All right, Steven.
I really related to that. I would 100% agree. And I've actually made that pivot even in my own work, because just as an example that relates to that, with my current project, I've had three previous albums that were eclectic and proud of them, a lot of good stuff, but it takes you out of the energy a little bit when someone doesn't have singular sound. And of course, there's artists as well that have a really eclectic sound and it works. What I like to work with is anybody, you know, working in PR. My main qualification is anybody good at what they do, like truly good at what they do, and they also care about it. So, and then the third qualification is, do I think I can be helpful in this process? So that being said, I do work with everybody from Americana and country artists all the way to progressive metal, electronic. I personally like ambient and IDM music a lot. And jazz, blues, soul, pretty much the gamut. If I only wanted to work with, you know, select few genres, it probably wouldn't work quite so well. So I do try to be open and have those qualifications, and I like multi-genre artists too, that, you know, they think they're strange, but if it's good, it's good. That's my belief. I mean, at the end of the day, you kind of have a inner feeling, you know, when something's good. So yeah, I like working with all that.
And I feel like, I was going to say, building off of that, when you have people who are a very specific genre, that scene very quickly just shrinks, and it becomes, you know, especially when you're trying to get reach, which, you know, for promotion, whether you're promoting live events, whether you're promoting your album or whatever, you know, that community is going to be very closed off. If you open yourself up to those other genres, you're reaching people, you know, you just tripled your audience. You just reached people that maybe were only interested in this other thing. And then you can show them this thing is great. And I think also to build off your point, it is the best when you see people making art who actually want to be making art, who are really enjoying themselves. I think there are an unfortunate number of folks who get into any kind of art because they think it will be easy. And what they don't realize is that being a professional artist is actually way harder, and you have to work so much harder at it just to get those little inches into a mile. And when you, it's great when you see people who are really doing it out of the love. And, you know, hopefully there's also money in it for them too. But I feel like no matter what kind of art you're making, if you're not, if it's not serving you, if it's not giving you joy, if you're not enjoying making it, then what are you doing?
Right. I was told once a long time ago that if you are trying to do music scene for the money, you're doing it wrong. Hmm. Money is great, but you got to have the passion for it.
Yes. And to be clear, you know, people deserve to get paid for their yes. time and their efforts because it is so much work. But unfortunately, it doesn't carry a lot of value.
No, it does not. All right. Now, episode 10. It's one of my favorites. So it's episode 11 coming up. Episode 10 happens to be on women drummers, which I want to do more of this episode, tell you the truth. So this is Evita and Ripley talking about being a female drummers. Check it out. Yeah, it is hard. Because when I was doing some research, of course, I should have got these guys going, is that I tried to do research on how many women are actually drummers, and all I got was 10% of the popularity is drummers, and 50% of men. I was like, that's not helping me with any with the exact numbers. I don't care about the 10%. I want to know how many people, and they couldn't give me the exact number.
Well, you know, it just seems that maybe Ripley, you can agree or disagree. I'm seeing more female drummers than ever before.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I've played in a couple different like female drummer showcases, like our band has, where one of them had I think there was like 6 bands at that show, all of them with female drummers.
Okay.
I mean, drummers, okay. Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah, and I played in a few showcases like that. So, I mean, they're out there. They're doing it.
Yeah. And then there are really, really badass women who could just sit there and just drum, sing.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. And just like, yeah. I mean, we have Allie from who's supposed to be here tonight. she's from Digging for Change and Heart Smashers. Mm-hmm. And we also have Grace from, I can't think of her name at the top in my head. So there's a lot of amazing female drummers that are actually starting to just astounds and making the ways through this 10% popularity of being men drummers, you know.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like they're alluding to 10% because they don't want to say it's 20. They got to say something, but you know, we don't want to say 20, 25.
Exactly. I'm coming for your drumming jobs.
Yeah, you know, move over, ladies. But, you know, let's keep it down.
Right. And 20%.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll just sneak up behind them and say, yo, we're here.
Yeah. That's it. You know, that works. That works really well. Yeah. We're here and we can play.
Yeah, almost, I mean, I can't tell you how many times when we go to play a show and stuff, when I walk in, I almost invariably, they'll be like, oh, are you the singer? Or do you play guitar? Like, they're always surprised when they find out what I'm actually there for.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's fun.
Even if I'm like carrying my bass drum into the, you know, venue myself. Like, are you the singer? I'm like, no.
Alrighty, so episode 11. This is actually one of my favorite episodes I've done so far. And this episode, I've been waiting for almost a year or so to get this episode to be recorded, and it happened. Now, this is on Women Sound Engineer. I had 30 questions to ask these ladies how about sound waves or whatever. I'm a women's sound engineer. Well, I got question number 7 because we went over the hour. We were almost going to third hour I didn't pay attention to what time it was. So it was very exciting. So here's a little clip from that episode. 1, 2, 4 women of sound engineers that are pioneer to the independent musicians. We're going to go one by one, talk about your experience, who you guys are, and then we'll go into the debate on, well, not really a debate, on discussion on sound engineers, what got you guys started, okay? So we are going to go around the room, alphabetical order. We're going to start with Allie. Allie has been part of a sound engineer for the past 20 years or so, and she's an amazing sound engineer. She taught me a few things, and also amazing drummer and all that stuff. So, Allie, go for it, and I will do each and everybody one by one. Okay, Allie, go for it. You got 5 minutes.
All right, how's it going? My name's Allie. I reside in the Great Pacific Northwest. Working for / founded Basement Roots Entertainment. How I got involved with being an audio engineer is I've been playing drums in various genres for about 25 years now. And just learning with recording studios, I started out doing recording audio and learning how to mix and master and get, you know, microphone placement and different frequencies and things like that. And I started dabbling with live audio about 15 years ago, because a lot of the venues in this area, you get there and all of a sudden there's no sound guy. So somebody has to do it. So it kind of started as an accident. And working with Law Dog Music back in the day, I did all their live audio for all their shows. And when I started Basement Roots, working with Shells, and she was my assistant for about 1.5 years, and we did quite a few shows out of the Y Sports Bar and Uncle Sam's. I'm kind of on a little hiatus from the live game right now just because life is crazy. A lot's happened to me this year. But yeah, I love doing sound engineering of all types. Studio can be fun because it's a totally different beast than live, and just getting to meet different people and working with different genres and things like that. Started out with a small little 4-channel mixer and 2 microphones 20 years ago. And now we have interfaces and software and Lord knows how many microphones and tracking and whatnot. Y'all know the chaos of it, but it is so fun and I'm glad that I do it. I think I actually enjoy it more than drumming, which is odd because people know how much I like to play drums. So I'm looking forward to the next little bit of time here. We got hearing some perspectives of some other people and how they got involved and how they do it. I'm rambling. Why'd you make me go first? It's morning.
Right. All right. All right. So we will continue on to the next person. Next person, we're going to talk to Miss Denise. She has been she's a 3-time Grammy Awards of her engineering and mixing. So Denise, please tell us more about you. You got 5 minutes if you want it.
I'm Denise Barbarita. Hello. I'm the owner and head engineer at Mona Lisa Studios in New York City. We're kind of a hybrid studio in the sense that we do music and we do post-production, mixing and recording both. A lot of our clientele is musical theater artists and writers, producers. We also do singer-songwriters and jazz and rock and basically any genre. The Grammy Awards were won in the children's music category with Lucy Calantari, Joni Leeds, and John Sampson, all incredible artists and songwriters. It was a lot of fun doing those records. Let's see. And in post-production, we work with a few different companies, you know, voiceover, narration, but also ambisonic mixing for VR360. That's a fairly new thing for me. I basically had a client who does 360 video who showed up at my door and said, okay, I just spent a colossal amount of money on a mix I hate. So you're going to learn how to do ambisonic mixing because we need that. We'll be patient. And I'm like, okay. So it took a little while to figure out, you know, what exactly that meant and, you know, update software, blah, blah, blah. But so far, so good. You know, where's wood? There it is. Let's see what else. So I started on this audio journey. It was a Pat Benatar album, believe it or not. It was Precious Time. My aunt had bought it for me as a birthday present, and I was maybe 11 or 12. And I honest to God thought that she could sing multiple notes at once. Because I, you know, listening to the album, you can hear that the background vocals were her, right? You can hear that the voices are the same. So I was like, at 11, oh my God, she can sing three or four notes at a time. And so I practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. And I was getting all down on myself because I couldn't do it. And one day I picked up this Hit Parader magazine. She had like this Bam Bam Flintstone shirt on and she's all... And the interviewer was asking her about her background vocal arrangements and overdubs. And I'm reading this. I'm like, oh, she cheated. She can't sing three. Oh, she lied to me. You know, I was mad for a few months, actually. And then, you know, because I'm old, I went to the library and tried to find any books about recording and found out that this was just a normal thing. And I was silly for thinking people could sing a few notes at a time until I heard about throat singing. And then that's a whole other conversation. But, you know, that started with, I think I got a 4-track recorder, started recording my own music. I'm a singer songwriter, also guitar, voice. And, that started the journey. Like I knew when I was in high school that I wanted to be what I thought was a producer. Until I realized that being an engineer was really what I wanted, you know, being able to shape the tonality of the sound, being able to, you know, get what the artist wanted, what their intentions were through sound. When it comes to live sound, I'm not a live sound girl. There's just too many. There are way too many variables. You know, anytime I've done a live sound show, usually it's sound mixing for a TV show or something like that where they have a musical guest. And, you know, I've got two bags packed for two microphones because I'm worried that I don't know where power is going to be. And, you know, every single adapter that I could possibly have is there. I think other people are better suited for live sound. I like things contained and in their little boxes. And that's pretty much the skinny.
All right, cool. All right. And now we're also going to go next to Georgie, right? Is that how you pronounce your name? I got it right. Yes. I'm horrible with names. All right. So Miss Georgie is also award-winning singer and songwriter, producer and engineer. And I am going to have her tell you all about her. Go ahead, Miss Georgie.
So I'm probably older than everyone here. And I say that only because I started with analog. And when I was 14, you could actually join a club on the back of a Bazooka Joe comic book and sell Christmas cards and sob and earn yourself your very own reel-to-reel tape recorder.
Wow.
So that's sort of like who I was. I was always doing boy things, right? You know, give me a screwdriver, I'm happy. And my grandfather was one to always have gear, cameras and tape recorders. And I also, as a kid, I was sick, I was home, and my neighbor, who was an engineer who designed prosthetics, he also used to take me to Radio Shack, if anybody ever heard of that. But you'd go there and buy parts. And he had one lung, smoked a cigar, and we made speakers and components. And I was shy. So I, even though I had musical abilities, I was scared to death to do anything. But at some point, my singer-songwriter got it was expensive, much more expensive then than it is today. So I sort of took my accounting skills and I started offering studios my accounting skills in exchange to have the key to their studio. So I started going in and I had purchased some live recording equipment, et cetera. But really, when I had the key and I was in there at night when nobody else was there, all the drummers in the area, I'd say, hey, come in. Because, you know, how many mics are on a set of drums? More than one. And you can learn a lot when you screw it up a lot, right? So that's, you know, it was a progression to finally where I had some success. I was on a RCA and Atlantic Records, and they put us out in Europe, so we didn't bother any of the girl groups at the time. We didn't compete with them. You know, we were good, but we can't compete. So, you know, I'm in another country. And the point is, I'm trying to figure out how am I going to stay as an artist? And so I had to keep honing in on my engineering skills. And throughout my lifetime, having traveled to, say, California and New York, I've been around some name, not going to drop any, but because you're in that community, you're sitting next to people that they talk about today. Nobody talks about me. I was there. I did a lot of work, but I'm not talked about. And that's why I'm here today, because I should be with a beard talking about audio, right? And then maybe everybody would listen. So the point is, I opened my own. You like that? I opened my own studio in 1986, and I had a 16-track Fostax half-inch and an Allen and Heath board and speakers. And I mean, I had one stereo compressor, and I had a reverb and a delay. And, you know, and I didn't have my band anymore, so I had to get into MIDI. Because who was going to drum for me? So, you know, I have to get the MSQ-700 and some keyboards and the Lin drum machine. And now I'm producing dance music, which I became a dance music production queen. And, you know, I had a record out in the Netherlands, blah, blah, blah. And so, again, my progression. And with my accounting skills in 1992, I ended up helping this studio, a couple of young guys, they were the best guys, still friends with one of them who's still living. And I helped them get a huge SSL console when they're like 27 years old. And two, not one, but two Atari 24 2-inch machines, which turned into Studers. And at that point, I became sort of like a hybrid disco production queen, and I produced an album, blah, blah, blah. But all of this, I'm like working for others, but I've got a little side thing about being selfish that I'm an artist myself, and I want to record me. So, you know, I'm interested there. And I used my skills to support other studios and counsel them and give them, you know, be a consultant. I still do that. Eventually, I went back to school, got a couple of masters, and I began teaching Pro Tools and opened and started a studio about 20 years ago in Wells, Maine, and began my journey of everybody should have Pro Tools, the whole world. And back then, you could buy a little M-Box and get Pro Tools for like $399, which you can't even get a subscription now, right? So I am, I'd say, probably retired for many reasons. I have some health stuff. And mostly I have kids that I mentor. I wish they were more female than male. but they're not at the present time. So right at the moment, I built my own, give me a screwdriver, some wires. I figured out how to do my own 7.1.4 immersive studio for like, I don't know, a couple of $1,000. And I can tell you how to do it without losing your mind. In the meantime, I helped three other guys, no woman, where are they? Wish they'd call me, set up their own immersive studios, right? One of them is in Boston, and two of them are in Florida. And they're all like huge stuff, thousands of dollars. But I have my little immersive studio, which I love. And I was happy to hear Denise talk about spatial, because that's another whole component of this. So at the present time, I live in Maine, and I still have an Allen and Heath board. I've got Pro Tools. Even though I almost lost everything I own, I hung on to my, you know, expensive PMC monsters. They'll go with me when I go into the grave and get melted down into infinity. So that's kind of like I'm at a point in my life where I'm a sound healer. And I am very much involved in doing an immersive on location, live, outside recording, and then in the studio of a sound, what people call sound bites. So I will be releasing, hopefully, would have been last year, but Georgie had to get into a life-threatening car accident because the story needed like something else to go on, right? So this year, 2025, and it's nice to see all of you, because meeting you, I feel like I have some people that I can bounce things off of. You know, like, I'd love to know what Jam and Denise and Ali would think about what, if, you know, does it sound like anything? Did I screw it up? I don't know. You know, so I am restoring my own music and mentoring kids, helping them get into college, and just looking for a place to share and talk. And hi, Jam. Hi, Ali and Denise and Shell and anybody else out there. If you can find me on the internet and you want to ask me a question, please don't hesitate. I would love to answer anything you might ask.
You got it. All right. And the last but not least, we have Miss Jam. She is a mixing and master engineer, music producer, and proud owner of, I'm going to say this, your studio's name wrong, Dinky Studios. Did I say it right? No?
That's great. It's Dank. D-E-N-K, okay, Dank Studios.
All right. Tell us more about you so that way I don't mess it up.
Yeah,
that
no problem.
That is such a drummer word to use to name your studio, just saying.
So, yeah, the studio name, I could tell that story later if you wanted.
Okay.
But, yeah. So my name is Jam Phelps. I'm a mixing and mastering engineer. I do dabble a little bit in production. I'm also a drummer. And I own a studio out on 30 wooded acres in Southern Virginia. So I live in the woods. I make records in the woods. I used to record a lot more. Now I just kind of record people who I already know. And I mix records for people all over the world. Denise Joni Leeds is a friend of mine. I've done some mastering for Joni as well. I'm really involved in the kids' music scene, thanks to Stravity Ops getting me into that. What got me into this whole thing, I guess it was I lived in Seattle for 4 years, and the whole time I was out there, I couldn't find anybody to play music with as a drummer. That's all I was doing. I didn't know anything about audio. And I just thought to myself, I think it'd be really cool if I could just make music on my own. And I don't play any melodic instruments, but I heard about MIDI and I got like a little setup. I got a little mixer and I got Audacity and I just started learning a little bit about audio. And then I ended up moving to North Carolina and we had a garage. And I joined things like Sound Girls, where I connected with y'all, and Omni Sound Project and all of that. And I started learning little by little about audio. I got some really great mentors and I invested in some gear, upgraded all my equipment to something that was a little more mid-level. And then the pandemic hit and I got laid off from my job. And I said, you know what? I'm going for it. And so I decided to open my studio full time. And I've been doing that ever since. I've been really, really blessed to be able to continue mixing records for a living. I've worked with some incredibly talented people. I would say my favorite thing about this job is getting to hear someone's song first before anybody else. Right. And really bringing it to life and making it sound exactly how the artist wants. My studio also focuses on marginalized voices, so I'm very passionate about that. I figure there's plenty of spaces in the world for, you know, cis white dudes and people in my community, and women, gender nonconforming, and members of the queer community deserve a safe space to make music. I also record allies. I work with some tremendous, very selective, but I do work with some tremendous men who are incredible allies to the studio. And yeah, I guess that really sums me up and what I'm all about.
All right, cool. All right. And I am Shel, so let's talk about the music. Allie actually took me under her wing for about a year and a half during COVID to learn how to do sound engineers and try to put things together. I did a few live shows with her, set things up where two women hauling this big ass speakers up on a stage. We're like, okay. And we did it. And then we had a beer. And then also I took some classes on sound editing and all that stuff in college, which I've now graduated from. And anyway, so I got a chance to understand what you guys might do in case of sound engineer. So it was very learning education in it. I really do want to do more of it, but I am here with my podcast. Hopefully I can learn something from you guys to improve my podcast stuff. So you never know. So, all right. Thank you. Alrighty, now episode 14. Oh, sorry, 12. We're going 12 now. Sorry, 12. I had two band managers, one experienced and one just starting out. We got Mike from Limberlost talking about him managing Limberlost. And then we have Making Stories assistant manager, Melanie, coming on the show and talk about their experience and how they want to inspire other band managers out there. So check this one out. Alrighty, so let's see here. Okay, so I know we've been talking about all this stuff, so how about some advices for people? I know we have a little bit of advice here and here, but what is mainly, I know this is a business, also we've been doing all this, but what is the main advice you want to give anybody who wants to bring their hat and go in as a manager? What is your advice to anybody? Melody, you're smiling for some reason.
I'm smiling because if this isn't fun for you, then don't even start.
Yeah.
That's true. The only advice I have at this point, because I'm not seasoned. I haven't experienced the things that Mike has experienced. And so only time will tell, you know. But right now, yeah, if it's not fun, then why bother?
I would dovetail on that because fun kind of encapsulates into this word I'm going to say, is that you have to have a strong enough why. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to know why you're doing this, and because that's where the joy will come from, is the accomplishment of accomplishing what you're trying to do. And, what's really worked well for me is I always assume I'm the dumbest guy in the room. Okay. So I listen a lot. But then when it's my, when it's, when I'm in charge, then I'm going to be the smartest guy in the room, you know?
Absolutely.
So, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, the right. confidence that you have to have.
Yes.
You have to be a people person. You have to know how to work with people. You know, I used to teach a little Dale Carnegie back in the day. So, you know, there's, you know, how to win friends and influence people, Napoleon Hill, you know, all those things. You know, and some people would say, well, that's being manipulative. You know, no, it's learning to read the, you know, if you want to, first of all, if you want to be a great entertainer and a great performer and a great musician, you got to learn how to read a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
You got to learn how to read an audience, you know, even if it's one person, you know, some of the best performances I've ever had and some of the best performances I've ever seen is when they walked into a room and there was like 10 people sitting there.
Wow.
Because you just let it all out. Wow. Just have fun. You know, you never go, oh, shoot, screw it. Let's phone it in tonight. You know, if you're doing that, then you're not in it for the right reasons. But just, you know, really right. have a good why and believe. If you're a manager, man, if you don't believe in the people you're managing, then you're just doing it for the money. And guess what? There ain't none. Ha! You know,
yeah. but, you do. You have to share their vision. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. You have to believe in them, and you have, because you, at some point in the relationship, and many points probably in the relationship, because there are artists, they are artists. That means they're very fragile. You have to be the Jiminy Cricket, you know, and you know, when they're ready to quit, you have to be the one that pulls them up by their boots to helps pull them up by their bootstraps. You have to give them the, hey, remember why we're doing this. Remember that, or coming in with something. One of the things that I always did with my band, it worked really well for me, is when they were getting ready to do the next big thing, I already had the next big thing after that booked. So
you were one step ahead of them. Yeah.
We're going to be one step ahead because and that worked really well for the people around the market too. Cause by the time they saw where we were over here. My engineer producer used to say, Mike's the greatest evil little kid with a laser pointer in this market, because he's wagging his thing over there, and all the bands run over there and go, let's do that, and then he's all the way over here by then, you know. It's but no, I didn't do that on purpose, but you know, that's just what it kind of how it appeared and how it, you know, how it
yes,
came across.
Did.
But
you did it on purpose. Yeah, I know you did.
I did. I am an evil, I am an evil little shit. But you know,
now, episode 14, episode 13 is basically is the other mix of the past seven, episode 1 through 7. So you can go check out that mix on the past seven, so because I'm getting ready to hit number 22 here pretty soon. Mm-hmm, I am. All right, now, episode 14 happens to be on more business side of the podcast, which I want to do more business-oriented talk, have a conversation, okay? Now, 14 is music labels. All righty, so I reached out for weeks trying to find a bunch of labels who wants to come on the show and talk about band labels. And so I had one out there in Tennessee, and I had another one here in Seattle. So check out this clip. Oh, they're from, we got Prepaid Friends and Avalon Records. Check it out. All right, so now we're going to go over to talk about trying to help bands avoid scam artists. So what is your guys' recommendation and try to avoid scams?
Well, anyone that wants money in advance for anything is probably not worth your time.
Amen.
And I've seen different types of scams. Sometimes people will reach out and in this super weird thing where they're like, I have an event and, you know, I want to book you. And sometimes I'll let this play out to try to figure out like what the angle is on it, kind of knowing it's a scam. But, you know, bands can be desperate. Like if somebody says they're going to pay you $1,000 to play it, a family reunion, they're probably going to listen to you because they want to make $1,000 and they want to play a show. And it's understandable. Like you can take an audience with all of these offers, but if they ever say to you like, hey, we just need you to send us $200 for the setup, and then we'll pay you $1,000 after the gig. Like that's shady. There's almost no chance that's legit. If you give them money, like assume that you're never getting it back and there isn't really a show. And with labels, if they want you to invest upfront, again, I don't know what your position is. Unless you're independently wealthy, it's probably not the label you're looking for. And you go find somebody that will be a partner and will like support you without you putting in a financial outlay. And the tough part is early on, you don't have any leverage. You don't have any success. So if a band's or if a label is offering you a contract, like you don't have leverage and you might get bad terms. And I would say, and a band probably would sign up because giving up 50% of their publishing, let's say, sounds good if you're making $0 and you're going to make something. But if you become very successful, that's horrible. So like, be aware of terms. Like if somebody wants to lock you in for long amount of time or a huge number of albums with really bad terms, like I would shy away from that as well. Like you, people can do a lot on their own too. Like build your audience and then give yourself some leverage. Mm-hmm. Like go out and just play shows and see what you can build up on your own before reaching out.
All right, Spencer.
Well, if I was talking to a young musician, singer, songwriter wanting to get started and they're worried about something being a scam, a lot of times you can break it down into one sentence. Are you ready to take your career to the next level? Or we can take you to the next level, you know, for just a little bit of this, you know?
Right.
So yeah, I've seen that so many times where there's predators out there seeking the young with the stars in their eyes, and they have all these big hopes and dreams. And just like Will was saying, if you have to pay an exorbitant amount of money up front and then say, yeah, we will provide this for you after you give us the money. I actually had a meeting with a label in Nashville one time, and they said, hey, we'll do these two or three songs for you. The cost is $20,000. If you can come up with 10, we'll pay the other 10. And I was like, so basically you just want me to pay you 10 grand to use your studio. That's what you're doing. I mean,
wow.
So yeah. And you know, I'm perfectly okay with a label saying, hey, we'll shoot a music video for you and you pay us for, you know, our labor or our time. That's anything. You go get an oil change, you pay for it. I get it. But to sell false hopes and dreams for a lot of money, I don't know. I just think it's kind of sick, to be honest. Especially right. Me being an artist and me being passionate about what I do and seeing people take advantage of people like that. It's horrible. And there's plenty of that around here. It's Music City. So.
Right. Yeah. I have some friends of mine who actually got scammed. One is in UK. It was actually here in Canada. And his band didn't survive at all after that scam. Another one, he put out big, huge posts about this certain label that scammed them good. They survived. They're with another band, another label now. So they're doing better now. They're able to recover because they have this support from another band. And so, yeah, it's really, really, it's really, really sad that people want to try to scam these artists who are wants to live the dream of being just a musician. So it kind of sucks. So, especially if you, Spencer, since you are looking at bands as a brand new business who are starting up, you're basically doing it as a startup business for these bands. So you're also that's big, very good on you, because there's hardly any labels out there that's going to help a band start up. It's a good one.
I haven't found any. I always tell bands that my business model is, you know, you have a band, so this guy, he's the bass player, this guy is the guitar player. I was like, consider me just another band member, and my job is to you know, build the website and promote your brand and create the logo and do the video and do the distribution. So we're in this together. That's the way I want to look at it.
Okay. All right. I like that idea. So, and the last one is one of my favorite bands here in Seattle. They are 15 Stitches, which I have been waiting forever to talk to these guys, and I finally got them on my show. I was such a fangirl, okay? Anyway, so this clip is about us figure how awesome our friends are in the music industry here in Seattle, how we became friends with this band, or me and Tim go to the supermarket and we have a conversation, or you know, something incredible, just everyday people going grocery shopping. Alrighty, so check this out.
And I don't remember this, but what sparred our friendship was Joe, the guitarist. I had walked up to him and just said to him, "You have an extremely beautiful guitar," and he was holding this Gibson, and that actually led to conversations and phone calls and talks and just music. And next thing you know, any chance I get, I try to play with those guys because they're great.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
They're not only a good band, but they're really cool guys. Like, yes. They're nice. Yeah.
Like, all around, to be around. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, when we did our, we did part of our promo video at the Overkill Lounge. Yeah. And I mean, those people from local bands in the crowd, we had, you know, Timmery from Lung Duster was there, Damon from Dead Electric was there. A couple of my other friends.
Papa Milk Crate was there.
Yeah. So it was, I think that speaks a lot to the kind of, again, what Chris was saying is that although it shouldn't be important, if I like somebody, it helps how I, you know, you'll go the extra mile for them. And definitely, you know, a lot of these bands, and they're just such sweet people. You just can't help but, you know,
do
extra stuff for them.
I would go out and say, like, most of my friends are just people that I've met in other bands around here.
Yeah. That's,
yeah.
Tam and I use a shop at Saxton Safeway. I don't live in Parkland anymore, but we used to BS in the aisles and just talk for a bit, and then he goes off.
Oh, that's right. I used to see you over at Safeway all the time, Shel.
Yeah, I don't Remember? Live over there anymore. I live in back in Tacoma for a little bit longer. So yeah.
Oh, I live over here in Parkland still. So now, still so holding down the fort for you.
All day, I go back there to do my taxes. So
the old neighborhood.
So Shel, can I tell you my grocery store story? My musical grocery.
Go for it.
Let's hear it.
So when I lived in England, I used to work in Harrow, and I don't actually know the Damned, but Dave Vanian lived in Harrow, and his marriage to Patricia Morrison used to be in Sisters of Mercy. And I used to see them go shopping in Tesco at lunchtime. And you see these two imposing people wearing black, kind of gliding through the aisles of Tesco. But it was kind of demystifying seeing Dave Vanian buying his cornflakes. I've got to be honest with you.
That's nice. My favorite thing is that I am Thunders of Wrath Mason. He actually delivers pizza, and so every now and then he'll bring me my pizza. And I was like, this is so freaking rock and roll.
What did he play in Thunders of Wrath?
He was a bass player and Lincoln player, and now he's with Phoenix. Feral Phoenix. Oh no, Phoenix Comet.
Phoenix Comet.
Yeah.
We played with them. We actually played with them at Real Art about a year ago.
Yeah.
I believe 15 Stitches did.
Okay, cool. Yeah, Thunders of Wrath, and those guys are, I've been following those guys ever since they started. So it's a bummer that they're not as rock and rolling as they have been. So that's the reason why Mason made Feral Comets. So
Thunders of Wrath was a really, really good band. Oh,
they're an amazing band. Amazing band.
I love them. If you haven't had a chance to see their video, Rob and Chris, go check it out. What's that called? It slips my mind.
It's Thunder Dank?
Yes. No. Not super dank. It's
I should know this thing because
not demon dank either. Is it dragon dank? Something weird. Something like that. Anyway, we'll come back. We can. I digress.
I'll go ahead. Now, going back.
Danger dank.
Thank you. Now speaking
that
of
is an amazing back, video.
It's very amazing. They had their van in there. It's so awesome about the van.
That the whole video. I would aspire that we could hopefully one day shoot a video like that, because that is a great video.
Believe it or not, they actually won best video of a war in a film video. They actually won.
I believe it.
I don't know what place they got it, but they won it.
Since we're on the topic of videos, we're actually in the process of shooting for our first video that should be coming up. Like as soon as we can get it all together, we're going to be putting one together for the song that we have, Light Psycho, which is off of our new album, Beyond the Wall. As of January 24th, it will be on all streaming platforms. It's going to be released through Wormhole Death Records. And anywhere that you go and find music, you can find us. If you actually want to go and find Wormhole Death, you know, they have so much music from all around the world that you probably never heard. That is some of the best stuff that you could put into your ears. They're a great place. So yeah, find those guys, find Wormhole Death Records, check out some of their music. They are lit. And we are going to be released to those guys too. And we just want to spread the word for not only for us, but for the company that's brought us into their fold, and all the bands that they're also representing.
Nice. Now going back to Milk Crate, Papa Milk Crate. I actually gave him that name.
Did you?
I did.
I might have been there, Shells. That was probably at the Y.
Yes, it was at the Y. And his wife or his son or something like that. He goes, Papa Milk Crate. I like that. And she's Mama Milk Crate. So
yes. Mr. and Mrs. Milk Crate.
Yep. And Papa Milk Crate is so proud of her, of his kids who are up there singing. He got up there and sing too. So yeah.
Well, they're a great band too. If you're around the area and you get a chance to go see Milk Crate, don't pass it up.
No,
they are like the epitome of Pacific Northwest music. They really are. Their whole sound is just such a blend of everything that's from around here that's superb. It's tasty.
Right. All right. So that is the seventh episode of this part two. Part three is going to be episode 24. That's what I'm working on right now. And so we're going to get that set up. If I don't get to 24, it will be coming up very shortly. So I'll let you guys know when that comes out. I'm really busy trying to get some things situated, like the blogs and more episode booking. So that's my goal, is to have the number third mix be on episode 24th. That is a goal. Alrighty. Okay, guys. So again, if you like this episode, please hit that subscribe button, and you guys will know, and that alert, you guys know when I'm hitting out more content and more episodes. And also, I'm doing a brand new thing called LCA Thing Community Connections. I am slowly getting that to the a daily thing. So I'm working on that as well. So that's be only on YouTube only, LCA Thing Community Connections. And so birthday's coming. So check it out. Stay tuned, and I'll see you guys next time. Alrighty. Let's talk about that music, because the music is everywhere. Thanks for listening to Let's Talk About the Music. I hope you enjoyed today's topic. Remember, the show is more than just a podcast. It's a multimedia experience. You can enjoy the content as a blog, a both audio and visual format, or stay tuned to connect with other conversation. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe, like, and hit that subscribe button, as that way you'll never miss an episode. Also, be sure to sign up for our newsletter for our latest update and exclusive content. Until next time, grab your headphones or tune in visually, and let's keep that music journey together. Let's talk music, because the music is everywhere.